This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Boston Sports Original on the go.
Wherever you go.
Just download the Odyssey app.
We're right back to it. Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI.
Don Sweeney yesterday. Couple of big, I don't want to say bombshells that he dropped or anything, but it is interesting to note that he did say there were contract offers made. Negotiations that didn't go anywhere. I can't imagine that Montgomery wanted to come into the season as a lame duck or that he wanted out of Boston and wanted to lose his job or be on the chopping block if they didn't get off to a good start. I can't imagine that that was the case. And also, based on the way the Swayman negotiations went, I think that there's something to be said for the way that this team's doing business lately. I just, you know, it's hard to really feel great about it. PK Subban. Do we have this, Stiz? Do you have the Subban video that Andy put in the email today? Because Subban went on for like 2 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Just ripping the Bruins.
Yeah.
And ripping their management and saying, you know, listen, you guys let the coach come into the season as a lame duck. You screwed around with your goalie, even though you already traded away all the leverage you may have had, and we're offering him this lowball offer. Do we have it? Okay, here, listen to PK Subban.
The Boston Bruins leadership is leadership, and it starts at the top with Cam Neely and
Hold on,
Don
stop
Sweeney.
It right there.
That's a good line.
That's a great opener. Can you just re-rack that one more time, Stiz? That is a great... I'm no PK Subban fan, just being a Bruins fan all my life. Like, I always used to hate PK Subban. Good player, but I just hated him. Listen to this open again.
The Boston Bruins leadership is leadership, and it starts at the top.
Beautiful.
We also need to paint a picture, Stiz, real quick. He's in a blue bathrobe.
Yes.
In this video.
And he's like in a hotel room.
Probably in a hotel room.
Yeah, looks like it. Yeah.
Clearly like just doing sort of the iPhone video himself.
Hanging out. Yep.
But he's in a nice blue bathrobe. And then he goes on to sound like you said you don't like him as a Bruins fan.
Right.
He sounds like a Bruins fan in this video.
He sounds like
me. He sounds like you.
He sounds like what I was saying
the
other
day. More articulate version of you.
PK, if you're listening and you're, borrowing some takes, I appreciate that. That's great. Here's the rest of it. Go ahead, Steph.
They have to take the lion's share of responsibility for where the Boston Bruins are today and the firing of Jim Montgomery. Listen, sports is a business, but business doesn't win you championships. The players do. So the management of your players, the management of your team, the culture of your team, all of that is very, very important. For me, the Boston Bruins management made some huge mistakes coming into this season. The first one was mismanagement of your best player. You guys messed that up completely.
Can we pause this quick?
Yeah. He's talking about Swayman there, by the way.
Swayman. I wanted to clarify because I think there's some debate as to who the best player in the Boston Bruins is.
I love Swayman, and I don't think he's their best player.
He certainly isn't right now.
He's definitely not their best player right now.
And I'm not sure he ever was.
Coming into the season, I didn't think he was their best player. Now, was he their best player in the playoffs last year? Yes. Yes, he was.
Oh, that's like a little short window.
Sure, but it was the playoffs. It's not like it's some irrelevant time period. It was the postseason, which is where the Bruins don't necessarily excel these days. Not sure if you've been watching, but
I am.
You know, they're not exactly some great playoff team. And he was great in the playoffs. I didn't win against Florida, but it wasn't because of him. He played very well, and guys like Pasternak and Marchand and McAvoy and Lindholm and all these other guys, Hampus Lindholm I'm talking about, all disappeared. So, yeah, the mismanagement of Jeremy Swayman. I think that's something that, at the time, was absolutely free reign to just rip the team. I did. I thought that they were very, they played it in a way that almost exhibited no understanding of how leverage works, how negotiations were, how any of that stuff works. Like, you trade away. Obviously, you can't play both Ullmark and Swayman 55 games. Something had to give. So you trade away Ullmark before you have Swayman signed, which was mistake number one. Once you've traded him away, now all of a sudden you're playing hardball with Swayman, who admittedly came out with the $10 million request, and you came out with $6 million. And then you just had this measuring contest for the rest of the summer until finally, here we go, we get to the end, and you're still not close. And that, to me, is ridiculous. That's a ridiculous way to do that. P.K. Subban's exactly right. Even if you think that Swayman's overpaid, you've already thrown all your leverage out the window. You can't play hardball now. It's just not going to work. Unless you think that Swayman's just going to bow down and fall in line and everything's going to be fine, which is a lot to assume about a 25-year-old goalie who had a great playoff and I think proved himself worthy of a big contract. Now, he's not living up to it right now, but at the time when it was time to negotiate, he was coming off a pretty solid performance. So, I don't know. I mean, that to me was a major mistake. Now, Jeremy Swayman, I think, is going to be the second goalie for a little while here, and he deserves to be. You deserve to sit behind Corpusalo and be the second guy while he gets the lion's share of these starts because you're not playing well enough. And it's beyond the idea of, well, he missed camp. I don't know, the camp, so we're a month plus into the season. We played 20 games. We're a quarter of the way through the season. Enough about missing camp. No one cares about that anymore. No one's going to sit there and be like, well, you know, you missed camp. What do you expect from him? At this point, I expect you to not be one of the worst goalies in the league, and you are. And this is me saying this. This is Jeremy Swayman, apologist, rump swab number one. You deserve to be benched, and he's going to be benched. I think Corpusalo is
not playing today.
And I think this is what you're going to see going forward.
And Corpusalo has been better. Marginal. I don't think he's great.
He kind of sucks too, but he's been better than Swayman.
I mean, Swayman's been giving up 5 and 7 goals.
Yep.
Just dangling in the breeze out there.
20 goals in his last 5
years. Yeah, like, he's not good. I wanted to read you something that I thought was very interesting. A throwaway line from Fluto on The Athletic.
I just saw you pull your notebook.
Excuse me?
You pulled your notebook out of your bag. So
you don't look over the desk and say you saw me pull anything out, my friend.
Well,
what I do over here in my own time is my own business.
I don't have a microscope to see that.
Oh, that's a cheap shot. They were already taking that cheap shot in the freaking Twitch chat a minute ago.
I did see you grab your notebook out of your bag, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Fluto wrote, if Swayman continues to take backward steps, he will not have many friends left in the dressing room. Which I thought was really interesting.
That is interesting.
Because first of all, it indicates, in my opinion, when I read that sentence, he will not, if he continues to go backwards, he will not have many friends left. Like,
as
he's
in
already
he's losing
lost
friends
some.
Now.
Like,
yeah,
there's
right,
already
yeah.
some that have tailed off for whatever reason. And this was the story was not about this. This was a story about Jim Montgomery. This was a line in a paragraph that I think I want to know, like, to me, that's a whole story. I need more depth there.
Sure.
What are you seeing? What are you hearing? What are you observing in that dressing room? Because so he has the whole pomp and circumstance negotiation, which I assume players generally stick together. You have the right to ask for money, whatever. But then when he gets there, and now we're 2 months in, what has he done or not done aside from he's played poorly?
Right.
Now, I don't know if it's as simple as the Gerard Mayo theory. If you go out there and say you're the best goalie in hockey, you better come prove it. You better, you know, sort of the Jalen Polk. If you say you have the best hands, you better go catch the damn ball kind of thing. It feels like more than that to me.
I would think so because none of these other players have a single leg to stand
on
when it comes
to
that.
They all stink.
You guys all suck too. So what? You're going to throw it all on Swayman?
There's like two or three guys in that dressing room that might be able to say, you guys all stink and like stand in the corner by themselves and point outwardly.
Yeah, Kalenic, that's it.
Yeah. Otherwise, y'all stink collectively. Y'all stink in your various roles and jobs and performances and underachieving and regressing. So why is Swayman losing friends in the dressing room?
It's a good question.
And is that a part of whatever the hell is going on? They feel like the on-ice visual of what we see them sucking is like the tip of the iceberg. Like between Montgomery and whatever happened out of shape and training camp and now Swayman losing friends, doesn't it feel like there's a lot bubbling under the surface there?
It does
like
seem
something
that
going
way.
On in that.
It does seem that way. Something stinks. Yeah,
yeah.
I think there's something.
It absolutely stinks. Yeah. It does not pass any form of a sniff test. And Swayman, it feels like he's at the center of it. To me, your guy, the best goalie in hockey, the rising star, the tide that's going to lift all goalie boats in the future, who can't stop a puck, and now his teammates don't like him. the hell's going on there?
Good question.
You are the PR person, the promoter, the hype man for Swayman. Explica, por favor.
If I had to take a guess, I would say that people are frustrated. They're looking at the guy who missed camp and blaming it on him. I think it's as simple as that. Maybe he's in the locker room being an a-hole. I don't know. I mean, I've met him a couple of times, and you observe him after these games, and he doesn't seem like someone who's particularly fiery or, you know, whatever. But
it's a little weird.
He also, I mean, he's a goalie. All goalies are weird. Every single goalie in the entire world is a little touched in the head. I mean, it's just part of the position. It's part of the, even in, like, the beer leagues. Like, every time you ever meet a hockey goalie, you're meeting a weirdo. You're meeting a weird guy. And that's just
the way.
They
beg kids to be goalie, right? Like, don't they give away, like, free equipment and free, like, league fees or whatever? Please play goalie.
For the goalies, I didn't know
that. The weird one.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. But I also think that he does have a little, you heard it in the Shut Up Mark podcast and stuff like that. He does think pretty highly of himself. He is talking about how he's one of the better goalies.
Very
now
highly.
He wants to set the market, and how he went to do business classes at Maine and all of that. And a lot of that rubbed people the wrong way. I don't know if it rubbed players the wrong way, because ultimately he's fighting for more money.
Yeah.
And players should be okay with that. I think it's as simple as this. Either he's got a personality quirk that we don't know about in the locker room, and if that's the case, fine, I don't know. But I do think it's just a collection of guys who are all underachieving, all of them, and they're looking for someone to blame it on.
Yeah, but
and it's easy to blame it on the goalie who's not playing well and who missed camp. I think it's as simple as that.
But to blame him performance-wise is one thing. But to say he's losing friends, you just signed him to an 8-year deal and the guy's losing friends? That's problematic, in my view. That is problematic because...
Like, is Pasternak losing friends when
right,
he doesn't
just
take
he sucks?
Any shots? Right, yeah. Like that's, I don't know.
Is
McAvoy losing friends?
Fluto didn't write that. McAvoy is gratified, so he doesn't lose friends. He's very gratified in the day that he cost his coach the job.
But yeah, I mean, Charlie Coyle, Pavel Zacha, are those guys losing friends? And if those are the friends that Swayman's losing, does it really matter? Those guys stink this year.
If anything, isn't the old cliche, misery loves company?
Yes.
These guys should all be in the same boat. We all suck together. We all got to figure this out together. No finger pointing, no thumb pointing, no anything. We all suck. Let's turn this around. We all have talent. Some of us are making a lot of money for a long time from this best organization in all of hockey, according to McAvoy. Like, it's weird, and maybe Fluto didn't mean it, but I believe words have meaning. And writers generally, when they put things like that, maybe he can't source it perfectly. Maybe he's not willing to do, like, source colon. Mm-hmm. No one likes Swayman. So you just kind of sprinkle it in and say, if he keeps sucking, he's not going to have any friends left in this dressing room.
Yeah, and if he plays better, then everyone's going to say, hey, that's our goalie. We all love him, and that's great. And no matter
what his
personality is, because that's the way it is. I mean, it's just winning cures all.
Along those lines, one more thing. You brought up the Shut Up Mark podcast. I don't remember if you listened to that whole thing or not, but he had a story in there where he sort of bragged about having the highest recorded heart rate in the history of University of Maine hockey.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It happened during the national anthem. Didn't sit with me. I keep remembering that. I feel like a goalie is supposed to be like, is this thing not working? Why is his pulse so low? Right? Isn't he like calm in the storm kind of thing? And he had the highest recorded heart rate during the anthem?
I mean,
either
I
he's
know.
A great American, I guess. He's like Jim Hacksaw Duggan.
Right.
Oh, and he's got the flag and the 2x4. Or... That's weird emotionally to me.
Maybe. Patrick Waugh was a bit of a fireball.
Okay. I'm
know?
Just, yeah.
So okay. It does not like
Patrick Waugh.
Well, no, I'm just saying.
How many cups he got?
Great goalies who were not necessarily even Steven is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know? Like, right?
Oh, I don't care if he gets amped up when he sees a breakaway, a 2-on-1. He's amped up during the anthem.
Hey, it's a good, it's
what
great
do you
song.
Do? Is it Smelling Salts?
America.
Yeah. I get amped up for O Canada. Okay, now there's a song right there. There's an anthem.
Really?
Oh, Canada's a much better national anthem.
I do figures. For blame Canada.
Typical liberal weenie. Why don't you move?
Technically. Come on. I think...
they don't want you up there.
God Bless America is better than the national anthem. I think God Bless America is a much better song than the national anthem. I don't even think that's a hot take. The national anthem blows. The national anthem is not a very good song.
Tweet it out, Brian. Christian Arkin of the Afternoon Show says...
I'm sorry. I'm talking musically. I'm not saying I don't like America. I'm just saying musically, I don't think it's a very good song. I'm not backing up at all. I'm standing 10 toes on this one. O Canada, better song than the national anthem. God Bless America, better song than the national anthem.
MAGA Heart does not agree.
It Ain't My Fault by Silk the Shocker and Mystical, better song than the national anthem. 617-779-7937. Rob Bradford is going to join the show as we revisit our Red Sox discussion that we opened the show with right after Sids gets you caught up on what's trending.
The Greg Hill Show, weekdays 6 to 10.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
All right, and here's what's trending this hour on WEEI and WEEI.com. Joe Sacco will make his debut tonight as head coach of the Boston Bruins after Jim Montgomery was let go 2 days ago. The Bruins welcome the Utah Hockey Club to the Garden tonight. Puck drops at 7 p.m. Korpisalo will get the start in net for your Boston Bruins. Patriots back out on the practice field today as they continue to get ready for their Week 12 matchup against the Dolphins. Kickoff from Hard Rock Stadium in Miami at 1 p.m. on Sunday. There were four DMPs during yesterday's practice. Those names included Christian Barmore, Jacqueline Roy, Vidarian Lowe, and Dietrich Wise. Seven other players were limited. Is the praise for Drake May too much, too little, or just right? Tommy Curran joined us last hour. Here's what he had to say.
I think it's just right, and I think the light dawns on Marblehead with more and more people as each week passes. I think that for us around here, you watch him against Tennessee, and you're like, okay, that's the guy. He's really good. They hit it. But then the next week, somebody else sees it, and they weigh in. And then the next week, somebody else sees it, and they weigh in. I think you have to understand that this wave is going to continue to hit new shores every week.
If you missed any of that interview or any part of the show, you can hop on the Odyssey app and check out the Rewind feature and never miss a moment. Celtics in Washington today as they visit the White House to celebrate Banner 18. They'll stay in Washington to take on the Wizards tomorrow night, tip off at 7 p.m. as the group stage continues for the NBA Cup. And Sam Kennedy spoke with the Boston Globe. He confirmed reports from last week that the Red Sox met with Juan Soto. Kennedy also said, quote, the goal is to win 90-plus games to not be worrying about a wild card spot. I'm Stiz. That's what's trending this hour on WEEI and WEEI.com. More afternoons with Arcan and Hart as Rob Bradford joins the show.
Get Boston Sports Original on the go.
Wherever you go.
Just download the Odyssey app.
We're right back to it. Afternoons with Arcan and Hart on WEEI.
Valdez is in at second, by the way. The pitch is a line hopper towards short into the outfield, a base hit. Sadon is going to come up throwing. They send the runner, and the tag is not in time. Head first slide, and the Yankees win it 2-1. They just took one hitter, and New York wins for the second straight night in extra innings.
That was Juan Soto walking off against the Red Sox back in September of this season. It's Christian Arcan. It's Andy Hart. WEEI Afternoons. I have upset some people on the text line with my national anthem take.
That's a hot take.
I mean, listen, musically I'm talking. I'm not Arcan. What do you know what that song's about? Yes, I know what the song's about. I've heard it a few times. I know what it's about.
But did
I don't
you
think,
listen?
I don't think it's a particularly moving song, excuse me, for saying that. There's other songs about America that are better than the national anthem. I don't see how that's even a really hot take at all.
Proud to be an American. No, that one does not count because we found out that that guy has other versions for Canada, for other countries.
Not cool.
I'm proud to be from Canada.
I respect the hustle, I gotta say. Like, you know,
that's
kinda,
fair.
I get that.
Get
you
the
know.
Bag.
Sure, go ahead.
Canadians
go
spend money too.
They certainly do. Does he have them for like Russia and Pakistan?
Imagine
like all
that, though,
like
if
all
you
the
go
countries?
All in.
Proud to be
North Korea.
North Korean.
From where Iraq. At least
I know I'm actually, never mind. I gotta rewrite this part. people are mad. Arcan, why do this when America's so divided? America's not divided on the national anthem text there. That's not really the thing. Someone called me a traitor on the national anthem.
Oh,
on the
T word.
And a C word.
Yeah. And the and
not
a communist.
That C word.
Yes,
communist.
Right. Yes, communist. My communist national anthem take.
I don't disagree.
I like America.
Maggot.
America's a fine country. I'm glad to be from America. I'm happy that I live here. But I don't like the national anthem.
Greatest country on earth.
I mean, what do you want from me? I gotta like every single thing about America. Thing's gotta be great. Come on.
Is the flag ugly too?
No, good flag.
Oh, okay. You're okay with that.
You know who's got a great flag is Albania. Albania's flag, now that's a flag. They have, like, it's red with these two, like, beasts on it. Like, that's a flag. Like, the stars and stripes are fine, and I do like them. But, yeah, the Albanian flag, yeah,
that pretty
badass. I like that flag.
So it's like a crest made out of badass back-to-back dragons
or
something?
Yeah.
Now, that seems like something Keith would like.
Probably, yes. I only even know about that from the Olympics. I wouldn't even known about Albanian's flag, but they were walking out with it. I was like, what is that flag?
Oh, it's a black double-headed eagle.
Hell yeah. Center. Now, that's cool. Come on. A black double-headed eagle?
right in the middle of your flat. It sounds like something America should have. But we got the stars and stars and stripes, not the stars and bars. It's something else. But yeah, good flag. Jesus. Very good flag. It's the Confederate
flag. This guy's
in
quicksand over here. Can somebody throw him a
line? You know, there's a lot of people still proudly display the stars and bars, so let's not even go there. But yeah, no, flag's fine. I like that. The flag is fine. And the national anthem is just not that great of a sign. Sorry. I mean, what do you want from me?
It's a traitorous take.
No, it isn't.
That's what he said.
No, it isn't.
508 thinks it is.
Well, 508's wrong.
That's his real world.
And it's also the 505. What's 505?
I've never seen that before in my life.
Pop that in right now.
There was also, just to be fair, there was somebody else that was like
505, Albuquerque, New Mexico. You're from a place, New Mexico, right?
Typical. I mean,
come on.
That's
right?
Where you belong, actually.
Really?
New England.
You live in a state. Yeah, right. We live in New England, and you're in New Mexico. How American are we really? You know? Think about it. We're just New England. You know?
Yeah.
He's
and
New
I told
Mexico.
You, if you read up on it, some New,
New
Englanders want to secede and become our own country.
Who wants to do that?
An organization.
Probably Vermont.
No,
the
no,
Vermonters?
It's
an organization.
Because, like, Texas is always threatening to do that, right? Isn't
yes.
Texas always
oh,
threatening
yeah.
to say, we're just going to be the country of Texas? And they're big enough to do it. New England's not big enough to do it, I don't think.
Texas has their own, like, electrical.
Yeah, they got their own grid down
and
there.
And that did not go well.
Which is constantly breaking
yeah,
down, right?
They all, like, yeah. froze a few winters ago.
Mm-hmm. And that ends, thus concludes the political section of the show today. But yeah, Juan Soto.
How about Juan Soto?
How about that Juan Soto? Dominican fella, as far as I
quite
know.
Quite a transition.
But yeah, he's out there. Sam Kennedy says that they are very much in the mix trying to get him. But they're already laying the foundation of Michael Silverman about, well, if we don't get him, we're still going to really go hard after these pitchers. We're going to spend a lot of money. If we have to go into the CBT, we're willing to do it. Which, I don't know, is that a bit of a qualifier there? If we have to, we'll do it. Not like, yeah, we're not even thinking about
that. Why would you not do it? Like, when he was saying that, I was thinking that it's almost like anybody, if you told, I don't know, your fiance, if I need to, I'll spend $20,000 on the engagement ring, kind of means you don't really want to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're willing to go there, just go there and spend like crazy and make something else better. Make everything better and spend $240 million.
Yeah, that's fine. For more on that, here's Rob Bradford, presented by McFarland Energy, the region's most dependable provider of home heating oil, including BioHeat, as well as expert HVAC services at McFarlandEnergy.com. Rob Bradford, McFarland to you, sir. How you doing?
Oh, McFarland, it's good to talk to you guys again. I'm back from Scotland because why not? I almost didn't come back, but I did come back for the sole reason to talk to you guys.
That's great.
Again.
And that looked like a hell of a trip, by the way.
Did you buy a kilt?
Like you're having some fun. Yeah. Did you wear a kilt while you were out there?
Nobody wants to see me in a kilt, number one. Well, number two is that the William Wallace stuff is like, okay, you know, let's get fun. If you want to get fired up, let's go. What was the William Wallace stuff in Scotland did not disappoint. So,
nice.
Yes, it was grand. It was great. It also gave me perspective of that baseball is not necessarily reached the world of Scotland, but I did my best to. It was probably a little creepy when I said to the guy, to the bartender at one of the pubs, I said, "Hey, listen, you want a baseballs and boring shirt?" And he looked at me like I had five heads. But you know what? It's a grassroots thing. Let's go.
Well, it's good to have you back stateside, Rob. I'm sure you read I saw you actually commenting about it today on Twitter. The latest piece from Michael Silverman, Sam Kennedy speaking out and making all sorts of declarations about what the team intends to do and how they're willing to go into the CBT, how they're going after Soto, how they're looking for pitching, all of that stuff. Why should we believe them this time around?
Well, I'll preface it by saying they've lost benefit of the doubt. Like, that's, you know, you don't have the benefit of the doubt. But I do think that we can go by, I'll tell you how I feel, and then this goes back to sort of the tweet I had a couple weeks ago, which is I do feel like their intent is different than any other time, certainly since the Dombrowski left. And we forget, you know, the intent of the Red Sox used to be something dramatically different underneath this ownership group. All you have to do is go look back and look at the 2004 Netflix documentary, and you see an ownership group were saying, we'll do whatever it takes, Schilling and Folk and A-Rod and everything. And then you're looking at it, this is the same ownership group? Are you kidding me? And then next thing you know, this offseason comes around, and you're starting to hear things different. And I'm not talking about publicly. I'm talking about behind the scenes. The Soto thing was out of nowhere. I mean, I was at the GM meetings, And I jokingly asked Breslow up in the suite when we had like four of the writers there, oh, yeah, you're going to go after Soto, right? And his response was sort of like he didn't laugh, which was sort of struck me as like I was joking. And then next thing you know, yes, they are going after Soto. So my biggest thing is, A, yes, you've lost benefit of the doubt, so prove it to me. But I will say this. The feeling I have behind the scenes and for what they've also said is that their intent is something that we haven't seen in a long time.
So that intent is good. I love it. I'm with you. I've been trying to sway my partner every day for months now that this feels different, that Cora felt different at the end of the year, the whole thing. But how do you envision this playing out? Because Soto is obviously sort of a one-of-one, $600 million, elite player, the whole thing. Is that legitimately their plan of attack? Or do you see something that could be more fulfilling in terms of two or three, like $200 million contracts where you get a big bat and a couple starting pitchers?
See, I think Soto's a different bucket. Right. I think it, you know, and I know that it all falls under the, you know, you have the total payroll and the luxury tax threshold and everything else. But listen, once you go past it, you go past it. I think either you accept that you're going to take the penalties or you don't. And anybody, I think, that wants to truly compete accepts that you take the penalties. So what? You get moved back 10 spots in the draft or whatever. It's about winning World Series. And that's what we can't lose sight of. So I think this Soto thing is almost from a different bucket where we know that this is going to be at a level that is unprecedented, that we'll never have to go through again. But I still think it's in terms of priorities for this team, it's 1A and 1B. It's you have the Soto thing, that's fine. But it doesn't change that they're still going to probably get a top of the rotation guy because that is the priority. So, in other words, if they sign Soto, it's not like all of a sudden you're going to get Wade Miley. No, you're still going after the Corbin Burns and the Blake Snells and the Garrett Crochets and those guys. Maybe how you get them is different, but you're still going to go after them. And, you know, so whether or not you get Juan Soto, you still, that is a priority and maybe the priority, which is getting that guy, and then you go from there.
Well, coming into last season, there was a lot of holes in the rotation. I know they signed Giolito, Bradfo, but I don't think any of us were super enthused about that one. But there was Snell, there was Montgomery, who admittedly didn't have a good season, but there were other options out there at starting pitcher, and they didn't even seem to be interested in any of those. Like, I don't remember, and this is for the Red Sox, the interest kings. You barely heard anything about them with Snell or a lot of these guys. I know with Montgomery, it progressed a little bit, but that didn't end up going anywhere. And I think that it's hard for me to wrap my mind around the idea that this year, now suddenly, after, you know, adding three wins to the previous two seasons, now all of a sudden everybody's got their wallets out and ready to make these big moves. Also, it's not so much about them being willing to do it. It's about them being willing to outbid all these other teams who are into it. And I guess the question is, why do you now suddenly believe that they'll have the gumption to go out and outbid the Cohens and the Steinbrenners and the, you know, the Dodgers of the world? Why is that now suddenly something you think can happen?
Man, there's a lot to pick through, but it's all good stuff, right? I mean, I think it is.
He was rambling.
No, that was a little bit. Yeah.
No, but
that was like a wiggy
question.
Fired up.
Isn't this what you want? You don't want apathy. Like, you want, like, why is this happening? You know, what was the cause of this? Should we look at this different? And I do think that there was a reverse course. Like, last year, when I look at last year's offseason, the biggest tell for last year's offseason was the Financial Times article from John Henry. Well, we have a 20-1 or 30-1 chance, which was, I hated that. I hated it because you know how you change the odds? It isn't like you're getting the cards and you can't change the cards. You invest more, you change the odds. That's how it works. Look at the Dodgers. So anyway, like, I just think that that's how ownership viewed it. And that's how they viewed it going back to when they hired Chaim Bloom. They said, we see how the Tampas are going. This is the way that baseball is going to do it, so forth and so on. And that's the way they've done it. Now, this is a course correction. What we also have to follow when it comes to this ownership group is that they are big in course corrections. They're, hey, you know, you missed on Abreu, the Cuban player. We're going to get Ruznay Castillo. Oh, we lost John Lester. We're going to pay $40 million more than anyone else for Price and then trade for Chris Sale. You know, all along the way, they are big in the course correction. And we were waiting for that course correction. It took them forever. I think what we're seeing now is just another course correction where they said, okay, we understand in order to compete, not only on the field, but business-wise, that you have to go on the model of the Dodgers and the Phillies and the Yankees and those sort of teams, because that's the way baseball is going. That there's just no room for interpretation, so we're willing to do it. We have enough money. You know that they have enough money, so we're willing to do that. And that's where I think, again, this is what you answer, like, well, why should we believe it? Why are they doing this? We've seen this about face a million times in different ways, and I just feel like this is another case of it, and I do believe it, because I do believe when, you know, when Craig Breslow says, this is what I'm being told from ownership, the word decisive. I love when he uses the word, we have to be more decisive. That's another thing that was important. Alex Cora going out to Los Angeles, I don't think he goes out there unless he actually feels like they actually had a chance at Soto. So all of this falls under the big, like what I said before, which is I just feel like they have this course correction. It's just a dramatic one more than ever, but still it falls in line with what they've done in the past.
John Dennis, two-part question for me. First, do we thank the Yankees and Dodgers and this postseason in part for this course correction? Did we see, like, oh, teams that really spend a lot of money and have, like, MVP-caliber players tend to play later in the season? And do you have an idea for timeline? Because that's been a big criticism of the offseason for all of Major League Baseball in recent years, the way things have sort of been ruined by things dragging out. Could we see a more expedited hot stove baseball this offseason?
Yeah, so the first question is, you know, I think that it's half and half, where it's like I said before, like, you know, when they hired Chaim Bloom, it was, look at Tampa, how Tampa doing. And there was other teams, look at, we don't have to spend as much to win. And they were falling in love with that. Now we see, like, to your point, like, stars and bigger payrolls, they are absolutely winning, not only winning on the field, but winning business-wise too. But, you know, I do think it's one of these things where they have to basically figure out what they're going to do in terms of if they're going to go after a Soto, and if they're actually going to say, we are going to be all in. Absolutely. This is the path that we're going to go, and we are going to go. Because, guys, they would win, and I've said this before, they would win every free agent battle they had. Mark Teixeira and John Lester, that's the only one they didn't win. They didn't win, and then Dave Dombrowski left, and next thing you know, you're complaining about Zach Eflin, you know, taking the same deal with Tampa Bay. Like, what happened to that? So what was the second part again? Tell me the second part.
The timeline for the offseason. Do you think we could get some action?
Yeah, the timeline for the offseason is, this stinks. Like, the baseball offseason is awful. It stinks. It's you know, the lockout, was the best offseason of all time because you had deadlines.
Yep.
I do think the one that everyone's waiting for is Soto. Mm. And I do think that Soto is going to be done. I feel by the time people leave the winter meetings, it will have been done. Like, that's how I feel, where you have these meetings. And by the way, like, the meetings, I don't get too caught up in the meetings, because John Lester's meeting for the Red Sox was a scrapbook, you know, and obviously they didn't win, so maybe it wasn't a good idea. But still, it was, the meetings are, you have to buy in to get in the meetings. That's what those meetings are showing, that you are doing the buy-in to get at the table. It's going to come down to money, but I do think that the Red Sox have more of a compelling argument than I think a lot of people are letting on, for the sole reason is that they can walk in there and say, you, Juan Soto, are our next David Ortiz. You are the guy who is going to, for the next 10, 12, whatever year, is going to be the centerpiece guy, much like Ortiz, the guy who is your hero, the guy who's hanging out with you in the Dominican Republic because they live in the same complex. So, yes, that is a compelling thing. Still, it'll come down to money, and if Steve Cohen wants to be Steve Cohen, then the Mets are going to win.
All right, one more question here, Bradfoe. You mentioned things that were brought up in the meeting. One of them was Soto and his people wanting to know about player evaluation, the prospect pipeline, and all of that, something the Red Sox certainly have over a team like the Yankees. They have a much better minor league system than the Yankees and than most teams in the majors. The prospects right now, considering the fact that you brought up Crochet and some of these other potential trades that could be made, how deep into the prospect bag are they willing to go to facilitate some of these things? And could that potentially affect Soto or somebody else who's going to sign a 10-year contract? Could that affect their view of the Red Sox as a potential landing spot?
No, the answer is, like, I don't think it impacted. I would be so very surprised if you look at the top four, if you're all top four are still with the Red Sox heading into spring training. I think they're going to deal off one of those, or if you wanted to say, hey, you're going to deal off Willie Abreu instead of Roman Anthony, then so be it. But one of these guys are going, if not a couple of these guys. I think they understand they have some duplication. They understand they have some value. And they understand, like, that you aren't going to – if you're going to take this approach, you aren't going to get to where you want to go if you just keep hanging on to all these guys. You have to pick the right guys, but I think they're willing to trade off some of these guys. And in terms of, like, how Juan Soto views it, no. Because beyond the top four, whoever you trade, you still have a really good farm system. At least that's the perception in baseball. And for Juan Soto, another part of this is, you are trading one of the main guys, but still, you're showing that you want to win. I mean, that has to be the other part about this. And I do think it comes back to the case that the Red Sox can present, is that that's another feather in their cap. I've got to imagine that was one of the drums they were banging on pretty hard when they met with Juan Soto. As I look at what we are, look at our ranking, so forth and so on. So I still put it at 20%, but still the fact that we're talking about it, the fact that we can get jacked up about it, it's a refreshing change.
All right, 20%. You heard it here first. Rob Bradford, thanks so much. Glad to have you back stateside, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, and a quick thing, I just want to say my thoughts and prayers. Larry Johnson, the passing of Larry Johnson, and I haven't got a chance to be on the air, and just one of the nicest people in the industry, and we obviously came up in a big show together, but just one of the nicest, most, talented artists, way, you guys know. I mean, we're going way, way back. So I appreciate Larry Johnson, I just wanted to take a couple seconds to remember him.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. Rob Bradford, I will talk to you again soon.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, that's Bradfo, back from Scotland. And, yes, of course, rest in peace to our good friend Larry Johnson. 617-779-7937. When we return, Bill Watch. We haven't done Bill Watch in a while. We haven't done it this week. And there's some news regarding Bill Watch as well. That's coming up.
UDACY. Type that into your app search, then download.
More of Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI.
WEEI Afternoons, Christian Arcand, Andy Hart. It's about 10 to 5. And we haven't done this all week. Let's get to Bill Watch.
Bill Watch.
Our hard work. Our hard work coming through in that piece of production.
We should get a Marconi for that.
We really should. They should name a whole Marconi category after us for that. Bill Belichick's name has been mentioned as a potential candidate for the Jacksonville Jaguars. However, NFL insider James Palmer says Belichick's interest in the Jaguars may ultimately depend on one key factor. Trevor Lawrence.
You think? The quarter of a billion-dollar quarterback they have?
Well, you get rid of him, you're stuck with Max, so good luck there, Bill. This may not be a great situation for him anyway with those two guys. However, Palmer notes that Jacksonville has some other nice young players on its roster and that the young roster could be a major catalyst for Belichick taking the job, especially if he is able to assume a larger role as well. This is what Michael France said. Michael France of Sports Illustrated said that the roster is still young and is a few pieces away from true contention. He wrote this earlier. A world-class drafter like Belichick. Excuse me. A what? A world-class drafter like Belichick? Is this guy? I don't know what they're putting in the water down there in Jacksonville, but
this
my
guy
word.
Been under a rock for like 12, 15 years?
A world-class drafter like Belichick, Jesus, could have much to work with. Here's the thing. Belichick could do more than just coach the Jaguars. The former coach has more than enough football savvy to act as GM, too. If he doesn't want to establish one himself, he could build a framework that could breed football excellence in Duval long after his reign is over. Yeah, just look at New England and how what a great situation he left here in Foxborough. I mean, my goodness, that is... I know things... They're down bad in Jacksonville. I understand that. They had the one AFC championship appearance 2017, I think, right? Yeah, was that,
that
one
by
year?
By the officials?
Which was, yeah, and Amendola made that great catch in the end zone. That was a good game. That was one of the better AFC championship games they had, and that was Blake Bortles that they beat in that game.
That was the Gilmore one, too, right? The coming across. Yes. He looked like almost like the Jordan logo, yeah. Like batting the pass down.
That was awesome. That was an awesome game. Anyway... You can tell they're desperate for something in Jacksonville.
Absolutely.
Desperate.
Desperate to the point where they're ignoring reality.
Right. And isn't that isn't that kind of what Bill's got to be looking for at this point?
No.
A desperate team?
No.
Well, aren't desperate teams the only ones that are going to be looking at him?
No.
No?
I said no.
Who else is going to be looking at
Bill
Belichick?
You saw my lips. You heard my
words. I did. I'm just surprised to hear
it. No. One word. Two letters.
Who else is going to be in the Belichick business?
So I am believing more and more. So I'm kind of out on the Cowboys. Because as we asked Schefter yesterday, this world where like Deion Sanders and Bill Belichick are vying for the Cowboys job is funny to me. But also, I know Bill might ask for certain things, but I just have this vision of Jerry Jones doing his post-game meeting with the media after Bill's first loss and Bill in his office, like looking up at his TV and throwing something at the TV like this a-hole is. So the one I continue to zero in on, it's where we started the season. It's where we started with a Gatorade bath for Gerard Mayo. I think the Bengals are developing into the perfect opportunity. Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase, studs.
Mm-hmm.
They are better than their record, but their record is going to earn them a sneaky high draft pick that Bill Belichick can add a borderline blue chip or pretty good player right out the gates.
And Bengals 4-7 right now, by the way.
4-7. Yes. And kind of a debacle. Like, they're putting up ridiculous offensive numbers for Burrow and Chase and yet still lose games and the whole thing. The Mike Brown, Paul Brown legacy thing, where Mike Brown essentially runs the Bengals, the owner. It's similar to Dallas.
Right.
But I think the Brown name and legacy, Bill could envision that as a place where theoretically he didn't give me total power. But when I get there, he's going to listen to me. He's going to do what I want.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have sway and say. And I have Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase. That's my starting point talent-wise.
Right.
There's few places that can offer that.
True.
Other dark horse for me.
But you're making it sound like everybody's going to be begging Bill to go there.
Well,
I don't think the Bengals are going to be looking to replace Taylor with someone like Bill.
I think Zach Taylor blows.
I think he does, too.
You're wasting the career of two Hall of Fame offensive players with that clown show bro offense and like, oh, every year we'll just start 1-3 and then dig out. That's not how this works.
Don't you think the Bengals are going to go after an offensive-minded coach? Like a Ben Johnson type or a Frank Smith or somebody
Josh
like that.
McDaniels?
Josh McDaniels? Right, I'm just saying.
With
well,
Belichick?
Maybe. But
with Belichick. No one's going to make Josh McDaniels a head coach. So he comes with Belichick. Everybody that can't see on Twitch, I made him kind of pause. Mm. He did like a little Drake May nod, like I'm thinking
so
about
it. So you hire Belichick just to get McDaniels? I mean, I don't know.
He runs the offense.
Seems a little ass backwards to me.
And if McDaniels plays it right, he might slide into Joe Burrow likes me for 3 years under Belichick, and then I become the head coach in year four when Bill retires. Anyway.
The Bengals, I agree, will be a hot spot. If they fire Taylor, they're going to be a hot spot. But I don't think they're going to want Bill Belichick.
I do. But I'm going to pose another one. And it's another quarterback, because I think the quarterback is key, right? Can we agree on that?
Sure.
For Bill? And
absolutely.
Because Vegas has been. Remember when everybody was like, oh, Bill's going to Vegas, Brady's going to hire him? Who's his quarterback? Is he going to go there for Shadur Sanders?
Maybe.
I mean, so now Deion.
Bill and Deion hanging out in Vegas?
I don't know.
That sounds like a scene to me.
I struggle with that. I struggle envisioning. Bill is a bit of a star effer, though. So I'm sure he has great respect for Deion, the player, and what he was able to accomplish and all that. The other one that I look at is in this AFC East. Now, we know the Jets are not the option because he continues to take pot shots at Woody Johnson nonstop.
Sure.
The Buffalo Bills are building themselves up for a Super Bowl run, correct?
Buffalo Bills are 9-2.
Exactly. And what happens when they go out in the first round in the playoffs? I think Sean McDermott gets fired.
There will be some talk. I don't know. I mean, fired, like they're
fired.
They're one of the best teams, if not the best team in the AFC right now.
Which is why there's expectation.
Right.
And you got to get over the hump at some point. And that guy, to me, is a questionable coach.
If they lose in the first round, they don't lose in the first round.
How do you know they might?
The Bills, I'm just saying, like,
and
historically, they're not some one-and-done
technically
team.
They might be the second round because they could have a bye.
That's true. I mean, you could see that.
But they could lose their first game.
He could be in trouble if they lose in the AFC Championship game. Like, they have expectations.
Maybe.
You're right about that. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
And
yeah, sure.
That ability to go to Buffalo, again, there's a little bit of that stick it to the Patriots.
It'd be hard to fire him, though, after this season.
It wouldn't be for me. And they have the Pegulas, new-age money-spending owners, like these billionaires that are probably getting antsy with this thing that they bought. They have Josh Allen, same argument. How long are you going to waste Josh Allen's great seasons, great play, great career? You marry him up with Bill Belichick, who went from a Josh Allen doubter to a massive Josh Allen fan in a short period of time. I just think there's an interesting angle there. I think those two teams might be atop my list because others that I hear, Jacksonville. If he doesn't love Trevor Lawrence, that's a disaster.
Right.
Because how do you get out from under it?
You don't.
Chicago.
Same with the Giants and, you know, some of these other teams.
Giants don't have one.
Right.
Chicago has one. But that's a diva quarterback. Mm-hmm. I can't envision Bill and Caleb Williams coming together and really working.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I just think the Bills are going to be too much of a destination. They're going to get all the top candidates, and I don't think Bill's a top candidate based on last offseason. I just don't think
so. Different offseason?
I think it's going to be the Giants and the Jaguars and teams like that who are desperate, and you know the guys that they want end up going somewhere else, so they have to settle for Bill. That's how I think this is going to play out if anyone hires him, which I'm not.
Re-rack Schefter from last week when he said he's going to have the pick of jobs?
Yeah, right. I don't agree with that. People said that about this last offseason, too. People said, hey, Bill's going to be unemployed he's going to be unemployed for about 2 seconds, and then someone's going to hire him.
People
and no
or
one
Schefter?
Him.
I'm not talking about, like, Stizzes of the world.
No,
the
Andy, a lot of people were shocked
Who?
When no one...
when no one hired Bill?
When no one hired Bill.
Are you serious?
Can I have, like,
revisionist history?
Like, real media examples? Not fans.
I'll go back and find them, sure, but I remember that, hearing that all over the... Hearing it on this station.
Yeah, there were people at this station.
Yeah. Like who?
Hillman.
Wiggy.
Pops off immediately, right away. I remember Greg Hill sitting here saying, if you don't think Belichick's going to get hired, you're an idiot. You know, like, and that was,
I guess I'm an idiot then.
That was fine. I mean, I thought
he was an old coot coming off some embarrassing performances.
He's still an old coot, and this has been kind of an embarrassing situation.
But he's still Bill Belichick,
too.
Too.
He is.
What does that mean?
But that
well,
didn't
the
mean
name
anything
rings
this past
bells.
Time.
Like,
okay.
The name does carry weight.
Sure.
Whether fairly or unfairly, the name still does carry
weight. I was going to say, good and bad,
weight.
Probably.
Yeah.
Some baggage in terms of the arrogance, what he expects.
Well, that was the argument. Like, what team is going to, what organization is going to let him come and, you know, take over the whole organization?
At 72,
and
now he's 73.
He's going to have his pick of
draft. I'm with Schefter. I think there's probably going to be like three, and I think you're going to be surprised. At least one of them will be one of these I'm talking about where it's like, oh, that's a pretty good job. Joe Burrow or Josh Allen or like, you know. Jalen Hurts, the Eagles have been a popular rumor
all
along
older,
the way.
You're getting them for 1 year tops, maybe two.
But you might win.
Maybe.
What if you win two Super Bowls in 3 years?
I mean, what if Sidney Sweeney walks in here? I mean, come on. Like, you know, we could
like,
what
I like your dream better than mine.
I do too. 617-779-7937. Tommy Curran joined the show earlier. We're going to pick through some of the things that he had to say about not this situation in particular, but the Patriots, their matchup with the Dolphins. That's all coming up right after this.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.